Hello, this is Don McPherson, your host of 12 Geniuses. For generations, when you purchased a car, what you bought is what you got. Our guest today is Alvaro Marquez, who is a customer experience designer working with auto manufacturers to reimagine the vehicles of the future. Alvaro talks about the software-designed vehicle. This type of car, SUV, or truck gets feature updates, adapts to your particular needs, and continuously improves using massive amounts of data, much like a smartphone. In our conversation, Alvaro and I discuss driverless vehicles, the infrastructure necessary to enable mass electric vehicle adoption, fleet management and ownership, and how humanity will benefit from our reimagined relationship with our vehicles. This episode of 12 Geniuses is brought to you by The Star Conspiracy. The Star Conspiracy is the B2B marketing agency for innovative brands creating the future of workplace solutions. For more information, head over to thestarconspiracy.com. Alvaro, welcome back to 12 Geniuses.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be back.
We have recorded a couple of episodes. Both of those were on trust and the future of trust. We met in person back in January of 2020, just before the pandemic broke out. So trust was a very interesting topic at that time. But maybe you can update our audience on what you are doing professionally right now.
Sure. So definitely the pandemic took me by surprise, like many other. I took a little break to look after our daughter, newborn daughter at the time. And after a year of kind of like being a stay-at-home dad, I joined Icon Inc. And Icon Inc. is a design firm, a design consultancy that it is working solely in the automotive industry, automotive and mobility. So anything that has to do with cars and how people get from place to place and how car manufacturers design and envision and develop new cars, new trucks, new vehicles. This is basically what I'm focusing on.
And in what way are vehicles being reimagined and redesigned?
That's a great question. It depends on where the reimagining takes place. I recently came back from China speaking at a conference about the future of user experience. And it was really fascinating to hear some of the use cases that they have there, which we don't get to see so much in Europe or the US, particularly around the third space. You know, there's a lot of people living in China and space is scarce and it's prime real estate. So it's really the third living space, the third living room that people are using for singing and karaoke, hanging out after work, decompressing, even sleeping. So there's a lot of weekend trips away or just people are doing a funny, colorful way of camping in which everything takes place in the car, from eating to sleeping to, you know, hanging out. And I'm not talking about necessarily big camper vans as usual, but actually, you know, a sedan or an SUV. So cars are being reimagined in different ways, a little bit depending on, again, the little particularities of the market. You could say that the cars themselves will continue to be imagined as a box with four wheels. But the way the cars are being used or will be meant to be used is changing radically.
One of the things that I have been reading about is the software designed vehicles. And that's probably not a term that's new to you, but it was certainly a term that's new to me. Can you describe what a software designed vehicle is?
Yes, for sure. I think I can talk about it. Maybe looking at another industry, if you think of telecommunications, if you think of, you know, handset manufacturers, we've had a fair amount of transformation, especially since Apple launched the iPhone in 2007. So you remember that handsets were kind of like a boring thing before that. I say boring in terms of the features, what one could do with them. So we did have mobile web, like this WAP, right? Pages and email was sort of like technically possible, but not quite doable. There were different form factors. But basically, handsets were an extension of to just make a phone call, right, to talk to someone and maybe send an SMS. Like multimedia messages were expensive and slow, and you had limited amount of things. So what the iPhone did for the telecommunication industry was that it would reimagine what a phone was for and when a phone was useful in the context of not only, you know, traditional phone calls, but for really looking at maps, buying tickets for the cinema, hailing a taxi, doing your groceries, staying in touch. When it comes to software-defined vehicles, it's a little bit like that. It's different, but it's a little bit like that. We're getting into a space in the development of the industry, or the maturity of the industry, in which cars are largely built on a hardware platform and a software platform. So you can think of cars as being more like a living product that evolves over time. So traditionally, when the car left the factory floor and you bought it, that was it. That was the car. It had everything you had purchased and wished for, and you could do some aftermarket tweaking, but in terms of features and capabilities, you know, what you bought was what you got. When it comes to software-defined vehicles, we are seeing how, for the first time, we can think of cars as an evolving platform for customer experience, where what you buy in the beginning is not just what you get over time, but a car that can be updated over the air, that can have continuous, you know, rollouts of new features and new services, and everything is basically built on top because it's software defined. So it's akin to software development and, you know, continuous iteration, as opposed to an industrial process that is mechanical and that is linear and it has an end stop and that it's complete per se. So through the lens of software defined vehicles, the mindset is that, you know, the car keeps being updated and evolved over time with the needs of the customer or the market.
I think of the pre-smartphone as being a useful tool, and then the smartphone being more of a source of entertainment, mm-hmm. or it's very, very consuming. Do you think the same thing could happen with vehicles?
Now, I don't think that cars necessarily will transform our day-to-day as much as the smartphone as we know it did. But I do imagine a scenario or two in which a lot of the things we do on the phone, we will be able to do in the car in a more comfortable manner. And some of that orchestration or those tasks that we seek to complete on the go, well, now we'll be able to do that just as we did before, but instead of having to look at the smartphone, you will be sitting in a comfortable space with more screen real estate or more quiet or more privacy, or, you know, having a better connection. Because this is something that we haven't spoken about, but a really big element of the software-defined vehicle is the way it connects with the customers and their digital devices, with the phone, with the home, with the energy grid, with the insurance. And so there's definitely more integration. And it could be that, as we see most of the content that happens on the internet today is about entertainment. And, you know, some kind of, how would I say it, just content marketing, I guess. But, you know, it could be that it is not going that route. There's a whole discussion about what happens with ownership when car sharing or carpooling becomes more commonplace, or where fleets of autonomous vehicles are much more convenient than having your own car, having to park it and having to own it and look for it and so on and so forth. And the difference between when do you use one or the other and what happens with one or the other. But yeah, it's a long conversation.
What are the driving forces behind the changes that you've been talking about so far?
Well, it's a little bit of a perfect storm. Maturity in the industry in itself. There is challenger car makers coming, particularly from China and from India, with global ambitions and strong manufacturing, you know, industrial capabilities, who have feature parity and they can compete on par, at least on paper, with established players. There's a electrification of the actual car platform, you know, new energy, as they call it in China, whether it's hybrid or, you know, hybrid plug-ins or battery electric vehicles or, you know, hydrogen fuel or whatever. So that is accelerating the way cars are manufactured and the way they're sold and the way they are positioned in the market. And last but not least is this pure market sentiment, together with the climate awareness and the pressures and the scarcity of materials, where for the newer generation, a car ownership does not necessarily align to a sense of achievement or identity or establishment of goals or, you know, achievement of certain goals as probably for previous generation was, you know, a clear symbol, a clear status signaling that, you know, when you drive a high-end BMW or a Porsche, it's not the same as when you drive your utilitarian Toyota, right? Or humble Renault. Not that they're worse cars, but obviously they signify very different things.
You talked about challenger companies, and certainly we're aware of Tesla. They're not a challenger company anymore, but they've been around for 20 years, and they've certainly disrupted the space. But there are other companies, and you talk about Chinese manufacturers, and from the sounds of it, they have features that are on par with the traditional manufacturers here in the US and probably in Europe. Is that an accurate statement? And then why are we not, if that is the case, why are we not seeing those vehicles here in the US? And I haven't seen them in Europe when I've visited there.
What really Tesla did to the industry is to demonstrate that a different way of playing was possible. You didn't have to be one of the, you know, historical manufacturing brands to launch a new vehicle that is radically different with a different proposition in a very, very lean way and making a reasonable profit. And it probably helps, you know, I think it's Tesla themselves who say that they're a software company that happens to make cars and not a car company that is now trying to do software, which is what happens with the established incumbents, right? So Tesla showed us that it was possible to come into automotive with a different mindset and a radically different premise with regards to what a car is and how a car is meant to be manufactured and sold. Now, in the case of China, we're seeing that on steroids. In China has been the manufacturing of the manufacturing powerhouse of the world for the past 20 years, I think, because it was just cheaper to outsource labor into China than to keep factories open in Europe or in the US. And so what we're seeing now is the very logical result of Chinese manufacturing having, you know, upped their game and set their ambitions really high, where they think we can do it as well as these guys, and we will do it in our own way, and we will establish our own roadmaps. So why don't you see so many Chinese cars in Europe and the US? Well, there's, of course, foreign policy mandates and protectionist interest. And we, you know, that we're seeing times in which certain countries are doubling down on local brands and resourcing and products. I figure some of it will be a matter of time. We are certainly seeing NIOs and XPeng and some BYDs and some Lincoln Co. And we are seeing some brands who might not appear Chinese at first glance, like Polestar. I mean, it's technically coming out of Sweden on the back of the Geely Group with Volvo joint venture. But it is Chinese capital, even though it's designed in Europe by European folks and it's coming out of, you know, the Scandinavia. But again, it's becoming very nuanced and it's difficult, starts to become difficult to tease out which brand is which and where are they coming from and how good or how bad they are.
One of the trends that's driving the industry is electrification. Yet, in the US at least, the majority of cars are either hybrid or internal combustion engine vehicles. And I wonder when we are going to see that shift. What does it look like in Europe? And when can we expect the majority of vehicles to be electric vehicles here in the US?
So much of that depends on the ability for countries to roll out infrastructure. So even in Europe, you have particularly Norway and the Netherlands, some of Denmark as well, very, very advanced with the rollout of the charging stations. But then you have places like even where I'm living in Berlin, a lot of street lamps are still gas powered. So you cannot plug your car there to charge. And in other places, it's, you know, whatever, there's a street post lamp, you can just plug in your car. So I have the feeling that it has to do a little bit less with the cars themselves and more with the ability for, you know, sovereign governments to support the rollout of an EV infrastructure.
What does the future of the driverless car look like?
We will still need people in the car to make sure for safety, right? Similar to how pilots are still there for controlling the process when the plane is flying, but a lot of the heavy lifting is done by the plane itself, right? So I think with fleets, with, you know, long-haul trucks, 18-wheelers, convoys, a lot of it we can assume that is, I mean, it's already happening to a certain extent, but to be even much more commonplace where you have a person sitting behind the wheel just for safety and for checking that everything is in place, but not necessarily for doing the driving itself, because we know for a fact that autonomous driving is, in fact, it's safer. There's less prone to accidents, to drowsiness, or to being tired or whatever. When it comes to the city, though, I mean, you've been to San Francisco, right? I think you already hopped on in a few, you know, driverless, right. You know, cars, autonomous vehicles, right?
Vehicles.
So it definitely makes a lot of sense in a way to have a system in place where the drivers don't have to worry about driving under the influence or how many hours have they been driving. And we know that with autonomous vehicles, as a matter of fact, the more the system drives, the better it gets at understanding context and making decisions, right? So I believe we will still drive for pleasure, because it's the sense of mastery and achievement and pleasure, you know, of the physicality of it, is something that I don't think there's a reason to give that up. But for sure, there will be a majority, or there will be a considerable number of trips, commutes we do that we will not have to, unless you really want to. You might just, you know.
Thinking about fleets of semi-trucks or something like that, could a remote operator be, you know, the instead of the person behind the wheel, could they be operating it from a remote location? Can you ever imagine that?
Yeah, and that is already happening.
It is, okay.
There's already a few startups where there is there's an autonomous fleet driving, and there's people in the office sitting with, you know, cameras and other controls, basically making sure that things go the way they should. And once you have a threshold level of, let's call it alerts or troubleshooting that the system cannot solve for itself, you might escalate to a human to say, you know, how should I act in this case? So yeah, absolutely possible. In a similar way, how you have air traffic control, right? You have a team working there, and there's more than one air traffic controller per airplane, right? So you could think of it the same way. You have a central or series of network nodes that orchestrate and coordinate, and for sure you can look after more than one device.
Yeah. What does infrastructure look like, or what changes need to happen to infrastructure? And I'm thinking about roads and bridges and gas stations. You talked about charging stations and building out a network, but what sorts of infrastructure changes need to happen in order to enable the vehicle of the future?
So yes, access to electricity, right? And charging stations, that is the basic foundational level that we need to have in place.
And on-demand electricity.
Yes, very much.
Too,
because, very much, which is a big headache in itself.
You know, people have to remember that solar and wind are great, but if you don't have storage for them, it becomes very difficult to charge vehicles or to produce electricity.
And difficult to manage the peaks, right? If everyone connects the car at the same time and tries to load at the same time, the drag is too much. So we need to think of vehicles as not only devices that consume energy, but potentially store and give back into the network when needed. So a smarter system to coordinate and orchestrate that energy, you know, being closer connected to the grid, basically. We need connectivity, low latency networks. This might sound obvious, but if you drive around the Autobahn in Germany, chances are you're going to hit dark spots. And it's difficult to have a phone conversation, just simple phone connection and simple data connection. So it's a bit of a running joke, but it's actually true. And you know, there's other places where with much smaller economies that have done their homework of installing antennas and coverage for, you know, for a particular piece of land, so that there's always access to the network. So there's the infrastructure, right? The energy infrastructure and the connectivity in the grid side. There's the low latency network and connectivity in every device, not only the cars, but the traffic lights system, you know, the city highways and you know, traffic ways. They need to be connected. They need to be smart. They need to understand traffic flows and density. And also there's one part that is less about technology and more about behavior, about how we continue doing our things. Do we continue working from home every day, a few days a week? Is it always the same day? Is it always at the same time? So there's that qualitative human aspect that we still, I think, have not quite fully figured out that will affect how we use the cities around us and the space. And for me, that's as someone working in user experience, this is the most fascinating aspect, because it's not something you can quantify and make a plan and, you know, execute on it. There's just a certain element of serendipity and nuance and specificity to each location, each culture, each country that, you know, makes it worth working in, at least for me, because nothing is quite sure. There's no one single clear future where you say, by this time, this stage, we're going to be here and here and here, and everything will work in a particular way. There's quite some juggling that needs to be happening from different actors, both private and public and individual, to get to a place where we see the future of automotive change in an interesting, in a meaningful way.
When you think about the future of the vehicle, whether it's a car or a semi or whatever, what jobs do you see being threatened and what jobs do you see being created?
In a way, I don't really like the question, because while it is true that some of the current jobs might be displaced by automation, I don't think as work or jobs is a zero-sum game. You know, some work might cease to exist just because it's not necessary, but new jobs will appear that we cannot fathom yet because we haven't needed them. So sure, there will be quite some period of transition, but again, overall, you know, I'm an optimist. I that's why I'm a designer, I guess, because I don't have the feeling that we have solved all of our issues in the best possible way yet. I think there's still a better way to do things in many regards. And sure, when it comes to jobs, for sure, some jobs will be automated, but which ones and how quickly? That is hard for me to say. But what is also entirely clear is that there's going to be a myriad of new skills we will need and new talent that will happen in parallel, I guess, as things develop, or almost in parallel.
I want to ask you about ownership, because in the US, I think we're using our vehicles about 5% of the time. And these are expensive vehicles.
Things, right? Yeah.
It's a big part. It's one of our biggest investments, right? There's the house or your rent, and then it's your vehicle.
I see ownership as a much more sophisticated model in the future, where it won't be either you own or you don't. Maybe there is something about ownership that changes also, where it might be, you know, part of your what do I know, Nissan service, you get to own one car, whatever own means, but you also, by virtue of owning that, you have access to a lot of other cars that you don't really own, but you can get to access should you need it to. And so the most important aspect of what I think is changing of in terms of ownership with the youngest generation is that Generation Z is a generation that is much more thoughtful about the meaning of experiences and buying access to events in the sense of happenings, things that are maybe a bit more ephemeral and less tangible, and something that you put in your pocket when you carry on with your life, or you put a little chip in your memory. So I suspect ownership will have something to do with that sense of, it's not only giving you access to the thing, but it's giving you access to the thing plus. A different kind of ownership will certainly emerge. We're seeing some of that in China. Of course, it's starting at the VIP level, which I think is how many of these transitions happen. But that will trickle down into the majority of us mortals who don't have 80,000 euros to spend on a car. So yeah, it's definitely interesting. And it's happening, and it's changing very quickly.
With all of these changes happening or about to happen, how do you see humanity benefiting from these changes?
Well, we always benefit, don't we? I mean, it's kind of like we have that hardwire in us.
I think, yeah, why would we make these changes? Yeah, no, I think we do. Why would we make these changes if we don't benefit?
Exactly. I mean, what's the point, right? If it's not to make things better. Yeah, you know, something that interests me a lot is the micromobility and the small car kind of like market that we see, particularly on East Asia and in Africa, where you have a wider range of variety of vehicle and vehicle types that serve a specific function and that blend the private and the personal, the commercial and the personal. Very interestingly, and I think we can expect to see a richer future of modular cars that combine easily what's public and what's shared and what's private and who gets to use what and when and for what reason. We're going to see that very soon. That's something that I feel very excited about because it adds diversity to the visual built environment around us, but also it creates a lot of efficiencies. So as you say, you maybe don't need to have a car that it is parked 95% of the time, but it is a certain module that you use and reuse and then detach and drives itself off to whoever needs what, when. And so I think it's definitely a smarter world in which we have less waste and more headroom to just go around our business, being humans and doing things that humans do.
Yeah, I definitely see the efficiency, and I think you alluded to convenience. Certainly safety, I think, is one of the ways in which we should benefit, particularly with self-driving vehicles. And we know that a lot of accidents are caused by distractions, so autonomous vehicles will not get distracted, or I hope
no, they won't.
And then one thing that we didn't talk about is lost time. So reclaiming some of this lost time that we spend behind the wheel, it's kind of mindless driving. We talked about the pleasure of driving, and certainly that exists, but maybe you could talk about the lost time that we would reclaim.
What would you be able to do with that 1 hour a day or 1.5 hours a day extra if you didn't have to pay attention on the road, right? Could you read? Could you talk to your family and friends or colleagues? Could you work? Could you watch a movie? Could you just relax and have a little nap? For me, that is an interesting thing that will connect into what I said earlier about the behavioral side of things, that it's less about technology and what cars can do or not do, but it's more about how do we want them to work? How do we want them to function, to benefit us, to align to what we hope to see, what kind of world we want to create? So again, similar to how I said that I don't think work and jobs are a zero-sum game where you win or lose. I have the feeling that the concept of the use of time and the opportunity cost of sitting in the car will kind of like shift. And that might also be location specific. The new generation, you might become an influencer. You might be doing some product placement in the car while you're sitting on your way to somewhere. I don't know.
Well, it's an exciting future, and I'm glad that you were able to share some of it with us. Alvaro, thank you for your time and thank you for being a genius.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to 12 Geniuses, and thanks to the Star Conspiracy for sponsoring this week's show. We will be back next week with another episode exploring the trends shaping the way we live and work. Thanks for listening, and thank you for being a genius.